Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSH Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSH Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSH Society Radio. Hey, welcome all to the show. This is FSH Society Radio. That's right. You can find us at fshsociety.org. Contact the show via email, fsh@fshsociety.org. Follow us on Twitter at FSH Society, as well as Facebook. And you can all link that, as I said, through fshsociety.org. So thank you all for being here. This is the inaugural episode, as I guess you would like to say, where we bring you all the latest news of FSH Society. We'll bring you a great featured guest each episode. We'll talk a little, and we'll obviously hear from you, the listener, as you reach out to us with email and some tweets. We'd love to hear from you of the things you deal with, either if you're a patient, a family member, a friend, or even if it's maybe a doctor on the front lines and you want to share a story with us. You can do that for sure, because you can be a part of the show here. That's what really what it's all about. This isn't my show. No, this is the FSH Society show, and we are the society. So my name is Tim, and I am the host of this episode, and for this foreseeable future, all of the episodes forthcoming. And I'm excited to bring this to FSH Society. A little bit about myself, I suppose, as you hear my voice each episode. I live in Wisconsin. I'm a husband and a father to two young boys, and I was recently diagnosed in the last couple months with FSHD. Quickly, I joined the society and realized, you know, I think I have more to bring, and I decided to bring this idea to them, and here we are giving you the podcast. But kind of backing up, maybe the story for a lot of people is similar to mine, where I was, younger kid and playing ball with my friends, or, you know, just competing against my peers, and realizing very early on, especially now in hindsight, man, you know, I just couldn't quite do those push-ups in that gym class as many as my classmates could, or, you know, I couldn't do a pull-up really to save my life, or not that many of them. And progressively, you know, I noticed this or that, especially in sports. I stayed relatively active, you know, played football in high school and some baseball for sure. And mostly, you know, playing around in the yard and pickup games, and loved to play hockey as well. And really didn't notice I was getting really tired or anything like that, or weakness. Just didn't always have that extra push or extra power behind the things I did, especially hitting a golf ball. You know, I would drive it, let's say, you know, maybe 200 yards, and my friends are blasting it past that. you know, you start to realize, well, at least I hit it straight. Well, sometimes. So, you know, and it all came to a head, I think, last fall, when I was throwing that football to my boys, getting ready for flag football season, as I love to coach kids, and including my own. And I realized that when I threw that ball, just that extra weight, compared to, let's say, a baseball, which I throw all the time, my arm went dead. And I had nothing, no push behind it. Almost felt like a disconnect between my head and my arm and my muscles, I guess. And I couldn't figure out what it possibly could be. And I thought maybe it's a rotator cuff or something. But before this upcoming baseball season started, the season we're about to enter now, I thought, well, I should go get it looked at. So, you know, you get to your primary doctor, he's not sure. I got winging, as they say, in the back area. Not sure why it's causing it. Next doctor is a, you know, orthopedic, and he's unsure, but he's fascinated by it. And then the neurologist says, well, it could be a muscular dystrophy issue, as my shirt is off for the, you know, examination, trying to do a makeshift push-up against a wall, and I thought I was going to fall down when he said those words to me. It's not something I expected, for sure, and his tactfulness was not exactly tactful. But I still respected his candor, because that's the way I shoot it, straight at you, you know. And I thought, well, okay, so maybe this guy's wrong. And some nerve tests and other tests kind of revealed, as well as an MRI saying it wasn't anything that could be surgically done. I found myself sitting in front of a muscular dystrophy specialist at the great hospital here in the Milwaukee area, which is where I'm at, in Wisconsin. And I was at Freightert, and I was talking to a doctor there. And maybe we'll have him on someday. That would be fascinating. Dr. Fee is his name. And that's kind of how my story, you know, ended, I guess, for this part there. But in the gaps between not sure, because not like, you know, I mean, those that are listening that have had to go through that process, I'm sure some of the process is longer than mine or more puzzling than mine. And but it's still relatable because, you know, that's a long span of time going from one doctor to another and then waiting for an appointment and then a blood test and so on. And in that time, I was kind of lost of what it could be for me and what it could mean and what was I going to do. And I decided that whatever it is, because I didn't know. I mean, I guess I kind of thought, well, it must be a muscular dystrophy issue, but what does that mean? And I thought, whatever it's labeled, I'm going to attack that. Whatever it is, I'm all in. I have to be. I mean, to understand that statement, you got to kind of understand me. And in time, I hope you all listening will become my friends and people that enjoy listening to me. And I'll enjoy listening to your stories as well. And you'll quickly come to find that that's what I need. I need, some might call it distraction, I call it focus. I need to be focused on that. Because if not, then the bad things come in, and the bad thoughts, and your mind wanders to places that it really shouldn't be because there's nothing positive there. And I'm not exactly Mr. Positive, let me tell you. But for this situation, I realized quickly that for my wife and for my boys, and especially if they get diagnosed down their life, I have to be an example now on these days. So if I'm going to cry or I'm going to get upset, I need to find a different time to do that, not in front of them, not in front of those that need my strength to give them strength. It was a very fast realization that there is no quit and there is no, I don't know if I want to do this. I don't have a choice. You can't shake it. It's like your shadow. And I've always knew my shadow was there. And just now I have a name for this thing. So if it's FSHD. So that's my story in short. And I really hope that we get a chance to listen to yours. And if you want to reach out to me or reach out to the show, you can do that. You can follow us on Twitter at FSH Society or Facebook. Follow us there, of course, and send us messages that way. Email is a great way, FSH@FSHSociety.org. My personal Twitter handle, if you are so bold, you may do that as well. Send me a direct message or follow me on Twitter, and that's at Rec Room Show, which is... I guess that's the backstory of why I do podcasting. I used to have a show called The Rec Room Show, and Rec Room Studio is where I record this and many other episodes of either personal hobby podcasts, or now my main focus and concentration is on this, FSH Society Radio, and I'm really excited to bring it to you all. So follow me there, and of course visit fshsociety.org. A lot in store as we go forward with these episodes. We have a great, great guest tonight, and I'm glad she could join us because, you know, it's really fitting when you come into an episode one, and it's really exciting when you do that in a situation like this where you can get the COO and executive director of the FSH Society to start us off on episode one. June Kinoshita will be our featured guest on this episode. We have an extraordinary conversation together. She tells us everything from the science of this FSH disease all the way to how can you become an advocate? What can you do? How do you learn more about it? How do you help your friends with it? How do you help yourself? And so many facets of the conversation take off from there. So I'm really excited to have you listen to that. It was a fascinating conversation with her. So each episode, yes, we will have the featured guest segment, which is coming up shortly. Coming up next is the news segment where we talk about everything going on in FSHSociety.org news and other news outlets that pertain to FSHD. And, of course, we want to, in further episodes, hear from you, the listener. So send us those emails, fsh@fshsociety.org, so we can fill that space with some great stories, comments, and other things that we get from you, the listener. We want you to contribute, and please do so. All right, let's bring you the news. Now for FSH Society News, bringing you the latest news from the FSH Society and other news outlets. Keeping you in the know about all things related to FSHD. Now for our first story, Fulcrum is looking for donations. At Fulcrum Therapeutics, human tissue serves as one of the most basic yet essential tools available to help in efforts to develop new medicines to treat FSHD and other genetic diseases. How can you help? Sign up to donate. The FSH Society has partnered with the National Disease Research Interchange, or the NDRI, to establish a U.S.-wide registry of individuals with FSHD and their family members who wish to donate tissue obtained during surgery or postmortem. Using this muscle tissue, Fulcrum has developed FSHD primary muscle stem cells known as myoblasts, which are capable of being expanded and cultured in our laboratories for many uses. Fulcrum will use these FSHD myoblasts for disease characterizations and early drug discovery activities. On to story number two. Acceleron is developing ACE-083 for diseases in which improved muscle strength in a specific set of muscles. Many provide a clinical benefit to patients, especially those with FSHD. They're now in their phase two clinical trials, and you can sign up to be a part of these. Their locations are as follows: California, Kansas, Missouri, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, Oregon, and Pennsylvania. To learn more how to sign up for the Phase 2 clinical trials, go to clinicaltrials.gov or FSH Society. A biotherapeutics company announced that its product candidate, Resolaris, was granted fast-track designation by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for the treatment of FSHD, making it the first known therapeutic candidate for the treatment of FSHD to receive this designation. Now on to our final story. FSH Society and the FSHD Champions, an international alliance of FSHD patient advocacy organizations, a consensus has been reached to move forward with the vision of an international global FSHD patient registry. Currently, there are FSHD patient registries in at least 13 countries that work in isolation. While this is important in ongoing FSHD research, having data in that rare disease scattered across so many registries that work in isolation presents problems. Ideally, FSHD patients' data from around the world should be collected in a single global registry or a federation of national registries that could talk to one another, so that data from as many patients as possible is gathered in a uniform way using the latest standards for diagnosing and describing the condition. Daniel Perez, co-founder, president, and CEO of the nonprofit FSH Society, says disease registries are an essential tool for advancing research to understanding a disease and improve patient care and develop treatments. This ends the news segment. For these stories and more, go to fshsociety.org. Okay, let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk to our featured guest, which is Jun Kinoshita, the COO and Executive Director of the FSH Society. You're listening to FSH Society Radio.
FSHD is one of the most common forms of muscular dystrophy. It's a degenerative disease that weakens muscles in the face, shoulders, upper back, and legs. FSHD robs you of your smile and makes simple tasks nearly impossible to perform. FSHD affects hundreds of thousands of people, but most have never met another patient. Many have not even been diagnosed. Someone you know may be living with FSHD. Let them know they are not alone and that we're making real advances toward a treatment. You can help by going to our website, fshsociety.org/curefshd. And share the photos and facts about the disease using the hashtag CureFSHD. By simply raising awareness, you could change someone's life and help us get closer to a cure.
Welcome back to the show. This is the FSH Society radio show, and this is the segment where we're going to have the featured guest. In each episode, we will try to bring you a great featured guest, and with this being episode one, we have the great honor of bringing in Executive Director and COO, Jun Kinoshita from the FSH Society. She plays a huge role, obviously, in the society. She's been there 4.5 years, and we welcome her here to the show. Welcome, Jun. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Tim. It's really great to be here.
You have such a huge resume. I mean, we're talking about, you know, you've graduated from Harvard. You've worked with the Alzheimer's Research Forum. You're on the Bright Focus Foundation board, and so many more other things that you're involved with. So, and it seems like there's like this underlying theme of helping and supporting and research. So I guess going maybe in the way back machine, how did this all start for you?
Well, if we go really far back, I have to admit this, but I was one of those kids who liked to read the encyclopedia.
Oh, that's
And I was particularly fascinated by human diseases and how the body worked. And I read ghastly articles about parasites, and I don't know, I just loved that stuff. But then, my mom was trying to encourage me to maybe pursue a career in medicine. And one day she brought home the Journal of the American Medical Society, and I started to flip through it, and I was like, it's just a bunch of ads for drugs, boring. So I kind of gave up the idea of going into medicine, but I loved science, and I became a physics major. And during college, I realized I didn't really want to go into research, but I loved communicating about science. So I decided I would write about science. And back then, there was not really even a career called science writing. I just thought, I'd like to write. I don't know if there's a career out there for that, but lo and behold, there is. There's a profession called science journalism, and it was actually just really growing, exploded around the time I graduated from college. And so I got my first career was in science journalism, and I got really interested in brain research. So I really sort of taught myself modern, neuroscience and everything from molecular biology and genetics on to up to the whole system and brain anatomy and how the brain works. And not that we know how it works, but that's the study of how the brain works. So that was my immersion, my conversion into modern biological sciences. And from there, I one day, well into my career as a journalist, I got a call from a foundation that wanted to develop a program in Alzheimer's research. So they had a lot of money to give away, but they wanted to make an impact on Alzheimer's. So I, segued into a new career working on the nonprofit side, actually giving away money. And it's a funny thing. It turns out it's not easy to give away money. If you want to have an impact, you really have to think about how you're going to invest that money. And so I helped this foundation think about how it could have an impact in the area of Alzheimer's and really move things along in that field. And I'm glad to say that we did have a pretty major impact. There are a lot of things going on right now in sort of trying to develop treatments for Alzheimer's disease that have our fingerprints on it. And one of those was a web community that I founded called the Alzheimer Research Forum. And that was the idea that early days of the web, I felt just in my gut that this could change the way people do research, how they communicate, and it should be able to speed things up. And I was really just going by gut feeling that this is going to change everything. And I didn't even have the language to describe what it was we were doing. So it's kind of looking back now at the impact we had. What we did was we really changed the culture of the field of Alzheimer's disease from one where people were fighting over like this hypothesis versus that hypothesis to one where people are just saying, well, let's look at the data. Let's talk about the data. Let's forget about whose camp you're in or, and let's share what we're doing instead of keeping it all, locked up in silos. And I think, I'm really, it is something I'm very proud of. I think a lot of people in the field have credited that website for really helping to change the culture of the field. And it's not the only thing. I think it's also, you know, younger people coming in and they weren't fighting the same battles. Old people, you know, a lot of things went into that, but kind of that was a real immersion in what it takes to go from basic bench science, you know, just basic discovery. How does what's going on in this disease to, you know, nurturing that through a whole stage of many stages of development into becoming actually a treatment. And so, and it's an incredibly, incredibly complex endeavor. I mean, it's one of the most complex things that people do. If you think of all the different systems and resources that go into discovering a drug and then verifying if it works and getting it through the whole regulatory process and getting it out to market. It's just, it's really a huge thing. And I had a chance to kind of understand some of how that works. So around the time that, you know, the Alzheimer Research Forum was getting close to maybe a 10 years old, beyond, and it was running really smoothly, and I just felt like I needed a new challenge. And, you know, I took a little break looking for something to kind of take up my, you know, to challenge me. And along came the FSH Society, and I have to confess I'd never heard of facioscapulohumeral muscular dystrophy at that point. But I Googled it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, this is an amazing disease that mm-hmm. they had just maybe a year or two before published the genetic mechanism of how FSHD worked. And I looked at it and I thought, wow, like this is crazy. Like there's this DUX4 gene that's normally not in the, you know, not supposed to be expressed at all in the adult, you know, muscle, but for some reason it gets expressed, and then when it does, it's toxic. And gee, like what a great target for a drug, because if you knock that out, you're not going to have any side effects because it doesn't have another role. You know, the analogy I use is it's like some terrorist who's hasn't taken any hostages. Right. You know, if you just take out the DUX4, you're not going to kill anybody else. And it was also completely new science. It was really different from your kind of garden variety disease caused by a mutation or what I would call a typo in the genome. This was something very different. And I looked at it and I thought, this may be the first disease that's caused by this kind of epigenetic mechanism. And I can talk about that more later. It's like, you know, it's caused by a change in the junk DNA, not the part that, you know, the DNA code part of the DNA, but this other stuff that we didn't understand. And I thought, this is going to be something that's going to come up with other diseases. This is going to open up a whole new understanding. So that excited me from a scientific standpoint. But what really, I think captured me is I've been really interested in rare diseases. I've been really excited by the potential of the internet to change things for rare disease because now for the first time, I mean, you had a way for people who'd been isolated before. You know, you have this rare disease and you could go through your whole life and never meet another person who has it. But now you can find other people online. And you can find researchers working on this, and you can kind of start to get connected, and you can start to put the puzzle pieces together. And I just thought, this is incredible, and I want to be part of that. I want to help create those solutions. And being someone coming out of the media, being an early adopter of social, you know, the web and social media, I thought, you know, I can figure this out. I know how to do this. And I think I felt I could have an impact. Fortunate enough for, you know, the board of the FSH Society to decide to take a chance to hire me, you know, because I, you know, didn't know anything about the disease before that. A big part of my job is fundraising, and I'd never done any, you know, I've never been a professional fundraiser, but and here I am 4.5 years later.
You're still working hard at it. Does it still challenge you in the same way, or maybe not necessarily challenge you, but excite you perhaps? When those first moments when you were researching what FSH was, you still have like a draw to it as you did that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even more so because I know that much more about it than I did back then.
Yeah.
You know, and at the time, you know, I thought, well, it's going to take a lot. You know, we've got to do a lot of things. I felt like we're going to have to, you know, we really need a more modern, responsive website. We need to kind of, you know, kind of beef up our presence on both in our print newsletter and on social media. We had, just to give you kind of example, my first newsletter, so, you know, among other things, I kind of edit and write and produce the newsletter. And so I was saying, oh, I need some photos. I need a photo of a patient for this and that. And there was nothing. There was no image library, you know, of professional photographs or, you know, the high quality photographs. And I'm like, oh, no, you know, we're going to have to create some, you know, some basic, you know, we need some assets that we have to create here. So, yeah, I just had this huge laundry. We had no videos. We had no public service announcements. But I had learned myself, you know, I'd learned how to make video. I learned how to use iMovie. I mean, I'm not a great professional video editor, but I could throw something together. I started bit by bit, like, you know, building up the tools I felt like I needed to go out there. So,
yes, absolutely. I totally understand what you mean, kind of winging it. We're here talking with June Kinoshita. She's the executive director and COO of the FSH Society. There's no question, you know, that FSH itself, I mean, when I've said it about what I have and I tell people, oh, I have FSH. Oh, what is that? I mean, every time I have a response, it is usually, you know, back as a question. And it's like, you know, what is that? So the fact that, you know, when I found out what it is, and I know this is, I kind of say it's something I've always had, and it's like this friend that has always been with me. I just didn't know he was there. And it kind of explains some certain things away. But to tell someone else that doesn't understand that, they're kind of at a loss. Now, as soon as I label it with muscular dystrophy, then it's an instant association of, oh, I know what that is. So for you in your journey with FSH Society, I mean, can you say it's probably, maybe it's countless times, or maybe it's only a few times, have you heard someone say, you know, what is that?
Oh, I hear it all the time, several times, many times a day. So
So what's your best response or best answer to give?
My best response, well, what I say, if somebody says, what is FSHD? I say, okay, FSH muscular dystrophy. Mm-hmm. So it's a disease that causes weakening of muscles. And there are there's dozens of diseases that are called, you know, muscular dystrophy. It's like an umbrella term, like,
it is, yeah.
You know, like cancer or something, mm-hmm. but you have like different, you know, the cancer is really hundreds of different diseases. So muscular dystrophy is, you know, dozens of diseases. What they have in common is they cause muscle weakening, muscle degeneration. And FSH may well be one of the most common, if not the most common form of muscular dystrophy. FSH stands for facioscapulohumeral, which is a mouthful, but it's
right.
Facio is the face. Scapula is the shoulder blade, and humeral is the humerus, the upper arm. And it's called that because very typically patients experience muscle weakness in those areas of the body. But there's also significant weakness in the legs and in the trunk and the abdomen. And it can actually affect just about any skeletal muscle in the body. So, it can be a very disabling condition, but one of the really amazing things about it is it has such a wide range. You can have a baby who's born with muscle weakness, or you can have an 80-year-old who doesn't know they have it, and they have maybe a little slight limp. You're such a mild case. So, and the remarkable thing is that across this huge spectrum from very, very severe, you know, devastating loss to almost undetectable, it's all caused by the same genetic mechanism.
That to me is very fascinating, because how can it affect this person next to me this way, affect me this way, and affect someone else totally different? And from varying degrees, obviously, you know, of you know, really, really horrible. This is, you know, like you said, totally debilitating to, well, this person doesn't even know they have it because it's so slight. I mean, I guess this is a question that I would assume we probably don't know the answer to, but do we know why it is affecting people a certain way and others a different way?
Well, we don't really know why, but I have a way of thinking about it, mm-hmm. which is based on what we know about the science. So I think of FSHD as a disease that kind of requires at least, you know, and this is probably way too simple, but I think of it as a two-hit, you know, two things have to happen. First, you have to have this genetic makeup to have the FSHD. You know, what makes, I want to back up a little bit. So mm-hmm. I said before that it's really different from other types of genetic diseases. So in muscular dystrophy, probably the best known is a form called Duchenne. And that is a disease. It's devastating. This is Jerry Lewis's kids,
right,
who are
right.
in the wheelchairs when they're little. It affects only boys because it's on the X chromosome, the female chromosome, and women have two X chromosomes. So if you have a mutation on one, you have a healthy version on the other. So you don't really get the disease. But if you're a boy, you only have one X chromosome. And if you have this mutation in your X chromosome, you get the disease. And it's like a typo or a bunch of typos that occurs in a protein called dystrophin. And it's actually, I think I've heard somewhere, it's the largest protein in the human body. It's a major building block of muscle, you know, molecular bricks that make your muscle. And the brick itself is defective. You know, the dystrophin just has the wrong shape. It's physically defective. And so your muscle is not normal. So that's Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And many genetic diseases are like this. The actual protein is defective. The mutation causes a defect in the protein. In FSHD, the muscle develops perfectly normally, as far as we know. And the mutation, it's not technically a mutation. It's this part of what used to be called junk DNA. So it's the stuff that we didn't know what it did. It didn't have the code for making protein. So we didn't know what it was there for. Mm-hmm. But it now seems clear that it's there to control genes, to control what, you know, when I use the term a gene gets expressed, what happens is the cell takes the information in the DNA and uses it to build a protein, build these building blocks of the body. So going from the information to the protein, that's something called expression. You know, the information is just sitting there latent,
right.
Nothing, you know, it's not doing anything until it gets expressed. So in FSHD, you have this junk DNA, there are these repeated patterns in the junk DNA. It's a particular pattern called D4Z4. And normally people have like 10 or more of these repeated units in a certain area on chromosome four. And in FSHD, you lose those D4Z4 units. So if you have fewer than 10, but you have to have at least one, somewhere between 1 and 10, if you have of these D4Z4 repeats, you are at risk of getting FSHD. And the reason is that associated with these D4Z4 repeats is this gene, this weird gene called DUX4. And when you have enough Z4 repeats, they kind of coil up like a telephone, you know, cord, like one of those old telephone cords. It coils up into a tight little bundle, and the DUX4 gene cannot get expressed. It's kind of tied up in there. And if you lose D4Z4 repeats, this bundled up section becomes less bundled up. Mm-hmm. And the mechanism that allows a gene to get expressed can kind of get in there. And so the DUX4 might pop out and turn into a DUX4 protein. And it turns out to be very toxic in muscle. And so we think something like this is what happens in FSHD. So you have a muscle that's basically normal until something happens and this DUX4 gene pops out and it's poisonous to the muscle. It's that combination. And for some reason, there's certain muscles like in the face and the shoulders and the upper arms and the trunk and the legs. They seem to be like set up to be vulnerable, to be more vulnerable to DUX4. But they're actually normal until DUX4 appears on the scene. So it's like this two-hit thing. You've got this vulnerability, but nothing happens until DUX4 pops up in a muscle. And it doesn't show up in all muscles at the same time. So there's like some second hit. Like it might be an injury. Maybe there's inflammation in the muscle. Maybe that triggers the DUX4 to come out, and then it starts a process and that muscle gets damaged. And very interestingly, the muscle right next to it might be perfectly fine.
Right.
And then you go along for a while and you like lost a little strength in one leg, but not the other.
Right.
And then maybe a few years later, another muscle gets triggered.
Something else. Right.
And you lose your bicep or something. So in every patient, that pattern can be different. Mm-hmm. Okay, one side or the other side, it could start in one person in the bicep and another person, it might first appear like in the, hamstring or down on the shin, the tibialis anterior, the muscle in the front of your shin or your calf. So that was a long-winded explanation.
but it's extremely interesting because it does answer the question. I guess you could simplify it for a guy like me and say, well, it's as unique as the people that it's affected, but that doesn't really get to the nuts and bolts of what's happening. And that's definitely the best description I've ever heard. And I haven't been dealing with this for a super long time when it comes to the clinical side of things, just being recently diagnosed and whatnot. But I'll tell you, I followed along just fine, but I'm also extremely interested. And I know that those that are listening are as well. And I think that spells it out very, very, very well, is that it is going to be unique, obviously, to each individual. And why? Maybe we don't know that yet, or like you said, or what even triggers it? Could it have been something that happened, like some type of damage or something else, or an injury? We're not sure, but we hope, obviously, with FSH Society working hard to raise money and awareness, and that maybe that lead to research so we can start answering some of those questions that maybe lead to, let's hope, a cure. You're listening to the FSH Radio Show, and we're talking to June Kinoshita. She's the COO, Executive Director of the FSH Society. We just got finished talking about a really great detailed description of what FSH muscular dystrophy really is. Now, what do you say to the people, your best advice, that, they just got diagnosed? Maybe it's someone like me, where throughout my life, I've always been kind of the weaker kid, and then all of a sudden, that cup on the top shelf's a little more out of reach than it used to be. Why is that? And so on. So, and then they get hit with this kind of diagnosis. And maybe to some it's more of a shock. Maybe to others it's not. I think it all depends how far along FSH has gone along in their body. But what's the best advice, do you think, that you can give those people that are just recently diagnosed?
Well, I don't want to sound, self-serving here.
No, not at all.
But I think the best advice is actually to contact the FSH Society because I think it's important to know, number one, you're not alone.
Right.
And there are thousands of people out there who've gone through what you're going through now. Mm-hmm. And you can really benefit from their knowledge and their experience. And We do a number of things. First of all, we give you education so you can understand, you know, what are the symptoms? How do you get diagnosed? What's involved in getting a genetic test? What do I need to think about? And what can you do? We don't have a magic pill right now, but there's a lot you can do to keep yourself healthy, to keep yourself, you know, coping well with the changes that are going to be happening over time with your muscles. We can put you in touch with peer counselors. So somebody who's similar to yourself and, you know, has, you know, coped well with it, but also knows what you're going through and you can just commiserate with and share knowledge and information with. I think those are all really important. They're healthy ways to cope with it. Cause you know, what concerns me is when people don't want to talk about it. They're traumatized by the knowledge. They're kind of don't know how to cope with, you know, this information and what it could mean for their future, or, you know, and the changing body image, or, you know, changing self image. Like, you know, I was always this great athlete and all of a sudden, like, I can't throw a ball and I'm just, you know, it's emotionally, it can be devastating, but it's even more so if you just bottle it up and can't talk about it, and people around you aren't talking about it and nobody wants, you know, I think that's incredibly unhealthy. And so we're here to kind of help put it out, bring it out in the light, give you information that empowers you to live with this and to know that there are a lot of people who have FSHD who it hasn't stopped them. It hasn't slowed them down. They're doing what they love. They have fulfilling careers. They have relationships. They get married. They have families, et cetera. You know, life isn't over. It's just different.
You're right. There is that shock to the system. And to me, it was more like the puzzle pieces got put together a little better. Oh, that's why I couldn't do this, or that's why this is happening. My doctor happened to use an interesting, or I think a good term that was very simplistic in its way. And he'd say, you know, you did this for a little while. For me, it was, I could throw a football no problem to my kids last fall. I got to the, you know, this, you know, or I should say two falls back, two autumns back. And now this last one, when I went to do it, it honestly hurt. And she said, so there you go. He said, it didn't stop you from throwing the ball. You adjusted. The kids came closer. You went sidearm. You figured it out. But on top of all that, he goes, it was just another stair fall. So you were good for a while, and then the stair fall. Now you can't. And he said, that will continue to happen, and so on and so forth. And you're right, it is a little scary, because to me, it is dealing with the what could be's. You could be like this, or you could be like that. And you really don't know. You know, there's no magic eight ball to wiggle, and it's going to tell you this is what's going to happen. And to me, that can either give you comfort to some degree, or it can give you fear. And to try to, you know, sort it all out, to me, that's where it gets very gray and hazy and kind of scary, to tell you the honest truth. So I think a place like FSH Society you can go to me, that was definitely a beacon in the dark a little bit of a light, like, oh, thank God, there's something out there I can at least reach to and then get some proper information instead of just Googling and figure out, you know, okay, what is this exactly and what can I do, you know, and what are other people doing, and then how can we work together and do this and maybe become advocates. And is that something too? I know that there are other people out there that want to start either their own local meeting groups and those kinds of things. Is that something that FSH Society can help them with too?
Absolutely. So when I started at the Society 4.5 years ago, at that time, there were no patient meetings going on, like support group meetings going on. I think before me, some years before, Carol Perez was really big on getting people together, and there were some groups going, but unfortunately she passed away in 2012, and so there was a period of time when there weren't any, you know, any groups going, but I, you know, I felt it was really important. It was the most, you know, direct way we could help people now, is bringing them together. So So we got some groups going, and there are now over 20 of them around the country. And I want to say, you know, what's really important about these groups is that they are organized at the local level, and we and they happen because there's a volunteer who says, I'd like to organize a group. And I often encourage people to find at least one other person to partner with. So there's backup, like, you know, if you're busy one weekend, the other person can do it. And it's all, it always helps to have somebody to, you know, plan with. And then the society can help because we can then do outreach and, you know, send out flyers and send out emails to all of the members, all the patients and families in your area so that they'll know about it and hopefully attend. We can also help invite speakers or think about, you know, who's in, who in your area might be able to give an interesting presentation or useful presentation. We have, as I said, we have over 20 such groups now, and we're adding several more this year. And it really, it comes from the volunteers, from the grassroots. So if you want to have a meeting in your area, you know, get in touch with us, and we'll help you get it going.
Yeah, you kind of get the you kind of get my juices flowing. I know I'm that's one of my efforts as well. I guess for me, and I know not everyone's the same, and but for me, you know, I decided very early on, and it was actually something I had in my head where I thought where it was. I saw four doctors, and I think I was on doctor number three with this, and then. And I thought to myself, well, whatever the heck this thing is, because obviously it's something, whatever it is, I made a promise to myself. I'm like, I'm all in. You know, this is, if this is the poker table, the chips are all sliding in the middle. I'm devoting. This is what it's going to be, you know, whatever this is, because I had no idea at that point in time. So, you know, as big as an undertaking as I thought it could be or as small as it could be, I don't know. But I guess for my own personal mental state, and even for my wife's, to keep me busy and to keep my mind forward focused and positive, which I can honestly say, no, I'm not always a positive, the most positive person to be around. But when I have something in front of me or a goal, it helps. It helps give me some internal support. And this is great to have FSH Society out there to give you some tools to say, yeah, well, you know, we'll help you with even the marketing of this or some ideas for topics that you want to talk about and those kind of things. So even the person that's not maybe necessarily the leader in normal situations can raise their hand comfortably and say, well, you're not going to be alone because you're going to get the tools you need by going to our website or contacting our people, and we'll get the ball rolling for you or with you.
Yep.
And then off you go. And you're right. Yep. I think, you know, one meeting leads to another, leads to another. And then that support grows. If you can do a teaser to some degree of what FSH Society has in store, is there any big events coming?
Well, yes, there are. So so we used to have, every year, we have a big international scientific conference. So this is where the scientists around the world get together. And then every 2 years, we had a national patient networking conference.
Oh, nice.
Where we would bring in about 10, you know, world experts to, you know, talk about a variety of topics, and we get, there would be workshops and roundtables, and so really a fantastic event, usually about a 2-day event. And last year, it was the 25th anniversary of FSH Society, and I was able to do something that I'd really, again, had been a dream of mine to do, which is really bring the two conferences together. So that's, you know, like the ultimate in networking. Right. Like the scientists had their conference, and then immediately after, the patients had their conference, and so a lot of the scientists were able to sit in on the patient conference. And this is really important because a lot of scientists, even though they're devoting their lives to working on FSHD, may never meet a patient, you know. Unless they're a physician researcher, of course, then they're seeing patients. But if they're working on cells and genetics and, you know, the stuff comes in a test tube. You know?
Right.
It's taken out of the patient, arrives in a test tube. And so for the scientists to be able to sit in a room full of patients is really meaningful and motivating to the scientists. And, of course, it's really exciting for the patients to see, like, wow, there are all these people who really care about this disease and they're working on my disease. So we did that last year, and we decided, you know, we want to continue that. So every 2 years, we want to bring the research conference and the patient conference together in one place. So we're working on that for 2018. Mm-hmm. And so this year, we wanted to do what I'm calling mini conference. So it's bigger than a patient support group meeting, but smaller than the full scale, biennial patient conference. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to try to have many of them in collaboration with an FSHD center, because I think it's really important for the patients to start gravitating and, you know, working around these clinical centers that are going to provide a high quality of care, but they're also going to be centers for doing research. Mm-hmm. And so it's really important to kind of bring all those people together more at the regional level. So this year in June, we're going to have one of these mini conferences in Ohio, in Columbus, Ohio, on June 11th is the plan. It's going to be at Nationwide Children's Hospital, which is one of the top FSHD clinical research centers in the country. Dr. John Kissel is one of the main people there. Dr. Scott Harper works on the basic research side. So we'll hopefully have some presentations there and some workshops there on June 11th. And then a month later, we have our annual benefit concert in San Francisco.
Oh, nice.
With the wonderful pianist Stephen Blyer. Many of our listeners may have heard of him. He has FSHD. He's on the faculty at Juilliard, a world-class musician.
Wow.
And he is in residence every summer in San Francisco. So we take advantage of that to have a concert there. And we decided this year we'd combine the concert with a conference. So on July 15th in the afternoon, there'll be a mini conference in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And we'll have some speakers and workshops there. And then that evening, there'll be this wonderful kind of benefit concert, you know, with a dinner and auction.
Wow.
So that's July 15th. And then we're planning a similar kind of thing in October in Los mm-hmm. Angeles, where we have our annual Ghostly Gala to Vanish FSHD. That's a Halloween costume ball. It's so Hollywood. And and we wanted to have a mini patient conference on the same weekend that we have the Ghostly Gala. And that's because UCLA has joined the FSHD Clinical Trial Research Network. So they, before this, were not really an FSHD center.
Mm-hmm.
But they are in the process of becoming one. So FSHD is now a focus of interest for UCLA for their neuromuscular, their muscular dystrophy clinic. And so we'll be inviting people from there to present and have again, it's part of that building that network and building the connection and relationship between the patients in the whole Southern California area and the UCLA, clinic. So those are three things coming
huge.
Up that
those are gigantic. Now, anybody can attend those, I assume?
Yes, anybody can attend. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to, make it worth your while if you're going to come out of town, maybe to stay overnight and have a weekend in San Francisco and be able to, take in the conference and the concert and have a little time left over for sightseeing.
Yeah, absolutely. You might as well roll it together to make a nice vacation out of it. I mean, you got some big dates here coming up in June, July. It's kind of a busy summer rolling right into fall. Those are fantastic. I know on the website looks like there was some past photos from that Ghostly Gala. Am I accurate on that? Yeah. So that looked like it was a lot of fun. I thought people were dressing up pretty neat for that.
Yeah, it was wonderful, and we actually had a live stream of the gala. And that was produced almost like a whole separate little live TV show during the gala. So we were doing interviews with people and intercutting little public service announcements to educate the viewer about FSHD. And then And we were so fortunate with that. We were able to actually, Max Adler, who is one of our celebrity spokespeople, he was on Glee, and he was in Sully last year, and wonderful, wonderful person. His mother and grandmother both had FFHD, so he's really embraced the cause, and he's been a really dedicated supporter of the society. Anyway, he introduced us to a company in LA that was just starting up that wants to, that produces live streams for charities to help raise awareness. And so they donated a huge amount of pro bono services to produce our live stream. And we all knew going in, like, it's an experiment this year. Let's see if we can pull it off.
Right.
And they did an absolutely marvelous job. The company's called Griff Entertainment. They came out of Merv Griffin's company, production company. And I think if griffentertainment.com, probably if we Google it, at the bottom of their homepage, they actually have a video that they put together from the Ghostly Gala, and it's awesome. They did it. It's a, like a sizzle reel. It's,
sweet.
Looks great. Yeah.
Phenomenal.
So we're hoping, you know, we're in discussion with them, hoping we can do something like that again this year. And our, you know, our ambition is, you know, to try to develop like the, you know, 21st century version of the telethon.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, people associate with muscular dystrophy with is the telethon, and obviously that went to raise a lot of money. And then, you know, ALS, they had the ice bucket challenge. So incredibly crazy, positive outpouring of people doing that. Do you see something coming like that for FSH Society, social media frenzy of some type?
Well, with FSHD, we have no place to go but up, right?
Right. Like, absolutely.
Any awareness is better than what we have right now.
Right. Absolutely. So, I mean, just look what you've done in just the 4.5 years, you know, with developing the meeting groups and then these great events.
So we've had a couple of social media campaigns. We're very fortunate. We are getting significant pro bono PR marketing services from a company called Shift Communications. And every year we plan some kind of a, and they specialize in social media particularly. So every year they help us design a campaign to go on social media. So the first one they did was called FSHD Selfies. People can pick up and start them up again anytime they want. But the idea with FSHD Selfies was that we really need to, like, literally put a face on FSHD.
Right.
Like, people, a lot of people with FSHD are not out about it to their friends or their social network. And what, you know, when people say, what's FSHD? Part of it is that, like, they've never seen someone was identified to them as somebody who has FSHD. Right. So we said, well, you know, if, you know, since it does affect facial muscle, not for everybody, but for a lot of people, to post a selfie and say, this is the face of FSHD. That did really well. I mean, people, a lot of people really responded very well to it. And, you know, and I had some wonderful articles that people wrote to me about the impact it had on them to actually out themselves and to suddenly get this outpouring of support from their friends who said, oh, I didn't know you had that. And they were retweeting the photos and, it was, you know, an incredibly empowering campaign for a lot of people. So that was the first one we did. And then we did one called #CureFSHD. And that landing page is still on our website, and we still encourage people to continue to post images. So from that, that was a campaign where we had these beautiful portraits of people with FSHD, and each portrait had a fact about FSHD.
Okay.
So it was taking the whole thing a step further to educate the public more about what FSHD is. And this year, we're still working on it, but one thing we started last year was World FSHD Day, and it's June 20th. And it's an annual World FSHD, you know, awareness raising day. So there will be one this year on June 20th. We have an official logo, and it's a bright orange color. It's got a, it says World and then SSHD Day, and it has a big orange, kind of like a smiley face, but with a crooked smile.
Right, right.
So
that makes sense. Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
And part of the idea is, you know, because people don't know what SSHD is, we wanted to show something that people recognize, but has a little twist to kind of open up a conversation, like, why is that the symbol for SSHD Day? And then you can have a whole conversation about
absolutely
how it affects your smile, how it's asymmetrical, how, you know, et cetera. Right now, encouraging people. So this is a really grassroots thing. We provided the logo. We have a theme color. But then we, like, put it out there and say, okay, run with it. You know, like, on June 20th, do your thing.
Yeah, right. Just, yeah.
You know, whether it's, like, printing it out and putting it up on your window so people can say, what is that to...
Yeah.
You know, throwing a backyard picnic and serve orange beer. I don't know.
Orange should be the color theme. Right. Final question for you, June. What is the main grand mission for FSH Society? Is it advocacy through social media? Is it a cure?
It's both. You know, it really is to, you know, promote better lives for everybody who has FSHD. And for some people, that's going to mean a drug that's going to stop or cure this disease. And for other people, you know, I was kind of surprised to learn there are people out there who says, you know, I'm not interested in a drug, but I just want to be able to live as well as I can.
Right.
Having this condition. So, and I totally respect that. And so for those people, you know, we want to provide, you know, education and a community of support so that, you know, people can help each other live the best lives they can. You know, and we have, and we should be doing research on, you know, what works. You know, there was a study just published. We're going to post about it on our website. But, you know, moderate physical exercise
mm-hmm.
and any kind of physical activity can actually help slow down the mm-hmm. progression of FSHD. And in this study, they actually used cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a, you know, a kind of a psychotherapy approach to help people overcome kind of negative thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say, you know, you're feeling weaker because of FSHD, and maybe you're feeling socially awkward because you don't like, you know, because you don't like the way you're looking or whatever mm-hmm. it is, and you're not, you know, you decide you're not going out, you stop doing all the things you used to do, and you get less active, and that's, you get depressed, and then
right.
you're feeling tired
all
the
events.
Time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like this negative spiral, and cognitive behavioral therapy can really help you get out of that, and you start being more active. And so they did a study where they took a group of people who are doing cognitive behavioral therapy, and they took magnetic resonance imaging of their muscles. So, you know, they imaged their muscles and compared it to a group that wasn't doing the cognitive behavioral therapy. And they saw that using the MRI, they could actually see that the cognitive behavioral therapy group was progressing more slowly. And in some cases, the dystrophy was reversing itself. I mean, it's not
wow.
a cure, but it was slowing it down. I mean,
mm-hmm.
really. So that's, you know, that's not a drug. That's a behavioral intervention, but it's right. backed by research.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are all things that, you know, the FSH Society wants to support. We want to support the research. So the research, you know, we have more knowledge, and then we want to make sure that knowledge gets out to where people can use it, you know, to live better lives.
Well,
simple as that.
That is a great goal, and I hope I can help in any way possible to help reach those. And I know a collective thank you for joining the FSH Society, and we do appreciate your time, June. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and good luck. I'm looking forward to future shows.
Thank you, June, for that. We appreciate you being on the show. That is June Kinoshita. She is the CEO and Executive Director of the FSH Society, and this is FSH Society Radio. Okay, now I wanted to share with you some events coming up, as well as some meeting group dates. We'll start with the meeting groups. April 22nd in Irving, Texas, the FSH Society Dallas meeting will be getting together that date. on the 23rd in Austin, Texas. Their meeting group for the Austin meeting will be getting together. Also, the fourth Saturday of every month, the Western Washington FSH community gathers. Looks like they also use Skype to kind of bring their community together to talk and share. Going on to May 7th, another meeting group in Miami. Shake a Leg in Miami, Florida. You'll be having your meeting group on May 7th. Looks like from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday, May 20th, there'll be the Minnesota FSH Society meeting group. The location to be determined, so please feel free to visit back again at fshsociety.org. Now time for some events happening over FSH Society in general. Saturday, April 29th, FSHD Physical Therapy Free Screening will be happening. Physical Therapy and Wellness in Los Angeles, California will be holding that. Looks like times to be determined, so please take a look at fshsociety.org for more details to come. Saturday, June 10th will be the Cossie Lorello Memorial Run and Walk. That will be held at Fisher's Pine Lake in Jefferson, Ohio. Sounds like a really fun event. That's 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on June 10th. Sunday, June 11th, the FSHD Family Day Conference will be held in Columbus, Ohio. That'll be the Nationwide Children's Hospital will be hosting a half-day FSHD Family Day Conference featuring world-leading researchers and updates on clinical care and ongoing drug trials. For more information, go to fshsociety.org. Then on April 15th, it's Team FSHD Cycling Kickoff Party at Urge Gastropub in Oceanside, California. That's going to be a huge event. Team FSHD Cycling, formed by George Pollock Jr., will participate in the Open Division as an eight-person team in this year's Race Across America, one of the most respected and longest-running ultra-distance events in the world. Racers must cycle 3,000 miles across 12 states. It begins in Oceanside, California, ends approximately 10 days later in Annapolis, Maryland. FSHD Cycling is racing to raise awareness of FSHD muscular dystrophy. How can you help? Go to fshdcycling.com or fshsociety.org to donate. Then finally, on June 20th, we have and we will celebrate the inaugural World FSHD Day to raise awareness for FSHD. Participants from across the globe, including individuals with FSHD, their families and supporters, and advocacy organizations will come together in various activities to raise awareness for FSHD. To learn more about World FSHD Day or to find an event near you, visit the FSH Society's World FSHD Day Facebook page event. To host your own event as part of World FSHD Day, check out the event toolkit to help plan and publicize the activity or spread the word on social media by using the event hashtags, hashtag World FSHD and hashtag Cure FSHD. That's it for meeting notes coming up and event dates coming up. I really thank you all for joining us and giving us a listen here on episode one of FSH Society Radio. I've had a blast. Special thanks to our featured guest, June Kinoshita, the COO and Executive Director of the FSH Society. It was fantastic having her here. If you want to reach out to me, you can follow me directly on Twitter at Rec Room Show, or contact the show via email at fsh@fshsociety.org. Follow us on Twitter, FSH Society, and on Facebook. And, of course, visit the website, fshsociety.org. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.